Hey everybody, this is Andy, aka Love Retro BTW, across Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. I do a podcast every Saturday called Cafe BTW, a morning gaming podcast, a retrospective look at the wonderful world of retro gaming, from interviews to guests. Join us every Saturday, like a Saturday morning cartoon, starting at 8 a.m., 11 a.m. Eastern. Also, if you're on Twitter, please join the brand new retro gaming community, a place to share, connect, and show your love for the retro gaming community. All the links are down below. And remember, enjoy the Gamers Week podcast.
This time on Gamers Week podcast.
So now we randomly get a Porsche crossover with the Series X consoles. They're making 75. You can't buy one. You can only win one. So yes, I of course also signed up. And if I get it, I am selling that thing so fast.
Oh my God.
I'd sell it for a cool thousand right off the bat. Here you go. Give me the cash.
Oh, you're cheap.
Oh.
It's not the first time he's heard that. You're right.
So Zach, huge thanks, posed this question in the Discord. When you make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, do you use a knife for both the peanut butter and jelly, or do you use a spoon for the jelly?
I use two different knives. I don't want cross-contamination. You know, the jelly should not be mixed with the peanut butter. Peanut butter should not be mixed with the jelly unless that is on two slices of bread.
Do you put the jelly on top of the peanut butter, or do you put them on the different slices of bread?
I put them on different slices of bread. The two should not touch. That's against the rules.
Until they become sandwich.
Right, there's
touching before sandwich. It's like marriage.
Exactly. It's like marriage.
No touching until the holy sandwich, Moni.
I now pronounce you PB&J.
Do you take this preserve?
All right. We ready?
Yep.
Let's roll.
All right. Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like, oh, I see what you f***ing did.
What?
You took out the period.
I took it out last time.
And I just left it.
You put a comma in there.
No.
No, I didn't. I took it out completely.
It's as he left it last week.
Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says. God damn you. I'm going to pause.
I don't like these pauses. No, sir, I don't like it.
No, sir, I don't like it. Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 76, and today is Wednesday, June 7th, 2023. My name is Donnie G. Retro, and I will be your host this evening, but I am not alone. My first co-host screamed louder than a preteen at an NSYNC concert when she got hit with a red shell earlier. Her name is Riders View, a.k.a. Blue Williams. How are you doing this evening?
If it hadn't have been the sixth red shell, like in the span of about 20 seconds, then probably the rage wouldn't have reached that level. But I heard quite a bit of screaming from you as well. And I seem to recall you rage quitting.
Why would you even bring that up and tell everybody that? I wanted to keep
you
that a secret.
You fired the first shot. One of these days you'll learn.
Nope, I never will. My second co-host loves FedEx so much that he's considering getting a FedEx tattoo. His name is Retro Game Brews, a.k.a. Rye Bread, a.k.a. Ryan Payne. The question is, where at are you going to get this FedEx tattoo?
First of all, you. Second of all, I'm going to get it where it deserves, right around my O-ring.
Ooh. Okay. How is that going to work?
Don't ask questions, though. We'll get there.
He's trying to visualize it, okay? Work with him.
Right.
It's an up to your imagination kind of thing, you know? And I'm going to leave it up to the artist who does it, so.
Give them artistic license.
So let's take a look at our reviews, reactions, and requests. At Dark Zansel says, with all the traveling I do, I absolutely love digital games. No need to cart around discs I may not play, but I absolutely miss physical like I got in the NES and SNES era. That is a good example with traveling.
For sure.
At Sleep is for Tea says, congrats on the 20,000 downloads and the 75th episode milestones. Super solid, and you all will keep growing, I'm sure.
Aw, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Fingers crossed. And at Berkow says, the poll introductions are now my favorite part of the podcast. I about pissed myself and I almost wrecked my truck driving to work this morning because I was laughing so hard.
Gamers Week podcast is not responsible if you piss yourself and wreck your truck when listening to the podcast.
Imagine filling out the insurance forms.
Now, what were you doing that actually caused you to have this accident? Here, listen to this podcast.
Yeah, you gotta check it out.
And now it's time for the
Let me give you one piece of advice. Be honest. He knows more than you can imagine.
Welcome, Blue. I'm Morpheus.
It's an honor to meet you.
That sounds like...
Let me tell you why you are here. You've seen the choices for this week's very important poll. And it's sitting like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad.
One of the choices is other.
Do you want to know what other is?
Yes.
It's all around us. Even now in this very room. The other is every game, and it is no game at all. Unfortunately, no one can be told how to vote in the very important poll. You have to choose for yourself.
How?
You choose one of the first three options. You go back to your Twitter feed and believe whatever you want to believe. Or you choose other. Comment with any answer you desire, and show Twitter how deep the gaming rabbit hole goes. Follow me.
That was great.
Well done. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Was that Morgan Freeman?
Yeah, it was like Lawrence Fishburne / Morgan Freeman. That was perfect.
I'm close personal friends with Morgan Freeman. Did I not ever mention that before?
No! We could have had him at our disposal this whole time.
I don't like to bother him, you know. He values his privacy. All right. Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP, our very important poll. And if you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. So the question this week, what is your favorite video game or series based on a book? Coming in at third place, we have Parasite Eve with 27.7% of the votes. Second place was BioShock with 28.8% of the votes. And the winner in this very, very close poll is The Witcher with 30.3% of the votes. We also had 13.3% of people vote other. So let's look at some of the comments from the poll. At GS Lioner said, I also do like Sierra's adaptation of The Hobbit, a colorful and charming action platformer. At Goatnado said, Neuromancer on the Commodore 64, woo! At Kilo Sikoa said, I have no mouth and I must scream, and Dante's Inferno are some good ones. At Tesseract Unfold said, ask me again after the Foundation VR releases. And at Emoesque said, Metro 2033. 10 years until we get to live in the subway.
Yay.
Yay. So how did you vote in the poll, Ryan?
So I struggled with this one because a lot of the games that I played are not really based on books. But I might go with GS Lioner on this one because that's my easy out. Is Sierra's adaptation of The Hobbit. Of course, I love that book. There's so much I've gained from that, from just a childhood of reading those books and becoming enthralled in that universe. So I'm totally going to cheat on this one. Going to go with The Hobbit.
All right. This is a softball. How about you, Donnie? How did you vote?
Well,
we don't know.
Exactly. Another softball. My choice was BioShock this week. However, whenever I saw it, I was like, the hell? It's like, there's no BioShock book. There was nothing.
That was, I think, a good third of the comments was, what book is BioShock based off of?
Right. And it was based off of, I believe it was Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged.
Correct. Right. It took some of those concepts. It's not really based, but it took some concepts of it.
They referenced the book, or they took certain topics from it and put it into BioShock. You know, and for the first time, I was actually seeing like Parasite Eve and The Witcher. I didn't know those were books. I didn't know Metro 2033 was a book. I was like, books. I don't read books. I don't read books anymore. What the hell? So when I saw these, and obviously I picked BioShock, I did start doing a little bit of research on some other stuff. And one of our one of the people that voted, he said comic books. And I was like, you know what? It's a book. And there have been many games based on comic books. So I was like, wow, I wish I would have picked that one.
I'm changing my answer to TMNT.
Yes, there you go. So, Blue, what about you? What was your choice this week?
I didn't have to think about this for more than 10 seconds. My choice is Alice Madness Returns from the American McGee Alice games. The art direction, the writing, the atmosphere of the game, it is all so good. It is so dark, gothic-y, disturbing. It's violent and bloody. And the subject matter is really heavy, but it's handled well. And turning children's properties into nightmares is one of those things that I just can't get enough of. So
I take it it doesn't fall too closely to Through the Looking Glass then?
No. It takes place after Alice has spent her time in Wonderland in the books, and she's kind of a teenager now.
Got it. And there's murder.
Oh, there's so much murder. Some of the game is legitimately horrifying, some of the stuff that's in there.
Really?
Yeah, I don't believe I ever checked this game out. I wanted to.
You should check it out. Well, I mean, it's mainly a 3D platformer / collectathon type of game. And of course, it's PS3, so you have to make allowances for some of the camera and stuff being a little bit awkward. Not everything is aged super well, but if you just want to go and experience the, like I said, the atmosphere and the art design of the games, it's amazing.
I think I will have to check that out then.
Do it.
All right, let's take a look at our patron shout outs for the week.
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. We have two new patrons to announce. A big thank you and welcome to Sassy Sony and Evo Lust. Woohoo! Woohoo! They'll be joining Random Retro Dude, Princess Kitty Mew Mew, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, Gamma Troid, Michael LeKite, Emo S, Bill Tucker, The Real Retro Game Brews, Fruitcakes Number One Stan, Duck with Thick Thighs, Compu Global, Hyper Mega Net, Hotmail at Hotmail.com, CatsDrivingTractors.com, Wizard of Zardoz, Bobson Dugnut, Retro Blast Pat, Great Cyberman 81, BNT Zilligai, Geek With That, Johnny Boombox, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven San, Ramboski, Terry Kinnair, Ducks in Disguise, Jim and Colleen, Games of Coffee, Hybrid Divide, You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, The Red X, PDX Family, including Shannon and Luke, Zach Huge Zank, and number one Blue Sick Boys fan. If you like what you hear today, we really hope that you do. Please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing like prizes and giveaways. You also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
And now let's take a look at our headlines. Our headline segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Currently, they're playing through Astro Smash and Crystal Castles. Visit them at RetroGameClub.net or follow the link in the show notes. I don't think I've ever heard of Astro Smash.
It was one of the big games on the Intellivision.
Ah, that explains it. Yeah.
Now, I do know Crystal Castles. I've actually played the arcade version of that one.
I've actually never heard of Crystal Castle, so look at that. We're complete, right?
The yin to your yang.
Donnie, you complete me.
Shut up. Just shut up.
All right, first up tonight from GameSpot, Microsoft must pay U.S. government $20 million over Xbox privacy violations. Microsoft has been fined $20 million by the Federal Trade Commission for collecting personal information from children via Xbox, which the FTC says was done without consent from parents. According to the U.S. watchdog group, Microsoft failed to notify parents and has violated the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act in the process. In addition to the fine, Microsoft will now also have to make several changes that improve privacy protection for children on Xbox. The issue stemmed from the process that was required when signing up for an Xbox Live account, which Microsoft only changed in late 2021. Signing up for an Xbox Live account required personal data such as a full name, email address, and a date of birth. And even if your date of birth showed that you were 13 years of age or under, Microsoft would still require more details. Until 2019, the process also included a pre-checked box indicating that you had accepted to receive promotional material and provide Microsoft with data that it would send to advertisers. According to the FTC, data from children was kept by Microsoft from 2015 to 2020, even if the sign-up process had not been completed. Regrettably, we did not meet customer expectations and are committed to complying with the order to continue improving upon our safety measures. We believe that we can and should do more, and will remain steadfast in our commitment to safety, privacy, and security for our community, Microsoft said. The company says that it now sees an opportunity to further advance safe digital experiences and that it plans to develop next-generation identity and age validation through systems that'll be tested in the months to come.
You caught us. You caught us.
Yeah, you said that. No, no, no. Regrettably, we did not meet customer expectations.
We apologize.
We apologize.
You know, what surprises me is that usually when it comes to harvesting data from people, it's usually on something that's a free service like Facebook or Twitter or
something like that.
At least that's kind of the idea here, is that when you sign up for a free service, you're essentially paying with your data. That's the idea. But when you pay for something, you realistically shouldn't have to provide necessarily your data, and that information shouldn't be available to data brokers.
Yeah, I agree. It shouldn't. But do you think all of these giant companies are going to pass up an opportunity at such a gold mine just sitting right there in front of them? No, obviously they're not. And obviously they're not above doing it for very small children.
Right. Oh my God.
That's just so creepy.
I have a thought with this, and it's because of the whole always on age. We're in the digital age. Everything's always on. So kids can't go and play their games on an Xbox, a Switch, or a PS5, PS4, whatever it is, without logging into something. So you have parents who are gamers who don't necessarily want their kids using their accounts to get everything all messed up. And, you know, you're going to go out and play Street Fighter 6 and ruin my perfect score. No, I don't want you to do that.
Or they'll come across all of Ryan's hentai puzzle games.
Exactly. You have to keep them safe. So it's that double-edged sword where you want to create them their own account, but they're not old enough to really have one yet.
But it sounds like they can currently with permission from their parents, right? That's the idea moving forward.
Right. And don't lots of companies offer child accounts? Isn't that a thing that exists?
Yeah. I think they do.
And it sounds like Microsoft is going to now, but it's too little too late.
Right. Since they already messed up. And that whole pre-checked or pre-ticked mark.
Right.
Or box that's some shady crap right there.
And $20 million seems like it's a low number. I would imagine that for all of the 13 and unders that they were able to sell data to data brokers on, they probably made a lot more than $20 million on this deal.
I mean, we talked about this maybe several months ago when Epic Games was fined $500 million for the same thing.
Right.
Is that a reflection on how many kids are playing Fortnite versus how many kids are playing on Xbox itself? Or why the discrepancy there, I wonder?
To be that much of a difference as far as violation fees are concerned or what have you?
Right.
Come on.
Yeah, $20 million is a drop in the pond for them. It's probably their monthly bagel budget.
I do like bagels, but yeah, the cynical part of me thinks that Microsoft is such a powerful company that they know some people, and the FTC was like, look, we got to do something to you, but we'll make it light, okay? Just do a better job of covering your tracks from now on.
And I know that they're already kind of in hot water with the FTC for potential monopoly mergers and acquisitions. So I wonder if this will have any impact on that moving forward.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it just doesn't help their cause.
It doesn't help their cause, but it's different issues. And you heard Microsoft. Regrettably, they got caught. They're super sorry, okay?
Like I'm super cereal. Super cereal.
Super cereal.
Is this an example, though, of parents needing as well to be a little bit more hands-on when it comes to their kids' gaming experience?
Well, especially if they're signing up for accounts and handing out their personal information. Absolutely.
Right. Because, I mean, would you as a parent be okay with your kid giving out date of birth, name, address, all that kind of stuff?
No.
No, but right. I mean, I think a lot of adults are pretty blissfully unaware or willfully right. unaware of how much of their data is collected every day. So either they don't think it's a big deal or they wouldn't think that it would be bad for their kids.
Right.
And if their kids get their own account, then it saves the parents hassle.
As long as I don't have to deal with this, then we're good.
Do whatever you want, kid.
I'm just thinking, too, from a security standpoint, what if that stuff gets hacked and sure enough gets sold on the dark web?
The dark web.
All your kids' info is out there.
The dark web. Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of kids who will be turning 18 in the next 10 years and will be horrified to see what's happened to their credit scores and all that kind of stuff of the amount of unregulated data sharing and collecting that's been going on in the last however many years.
Man, I'm glad I grew up in the freaking 80s.
Right.
Email? What's an email?
All right, next up from DualShockers, Street Fighter VI becomes just the 29th game in 37 years to win prestigious award. Street Fighter VI is the 29th recipient of a perfect score from the illustrious Japanese gaming magazine Famitsu. Its second game in the past month to receive a perfect 40 out of 40 score from Famitsu, along with Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Famitsu's review process is unique, with four different reviewers playing the game and each scoring it out of 10. Street Fighter VI now joins a prestigious group that includes The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, Elder Scrolls V, Skyrim, Grand Theft Auto V, and Bayonetta. It is the first Street Fighter installment to receive this accolade. Elsewhere, Street Fighter VI has been a resounding critical success, holding a Metacritic average score of 90 or higher across each of the current generation's platforms. Additionally, Capcom recently confirmed sales figures for the Street Fighter series. Street Fighter VI has managed to sell 1 million copies in the first weekend on the market, which pushes franchise sales past 50 million. Even today, more than 35 years since Street Fighter first debuted, the series still enjoys immense popularity across the globe, with cumulative sales for the series totaling over 50 million units worldwide. Capcom said in a press release, Capcom celebrated the milestone with a new image that sees series veteran Ryu fist bumping with many recognizable roster stars, including Ken, Blanka, Chun-Li, Dalsim, Elena, Armaika, Cammy, and others. As stat tracker DomsPlay notes on Twitter, Street Fighter VI performance outpaces its predecessor by a large margin. It took Street Fighter V around 6 weeks to sell 1.4 million copies. Street Fighter VI is available now on PlayStation, PC, and Xbox platforms.
But not Switch.
It'll get there, probably, maybe.
Yeah, in 2032.
Give it a couple years when the sales of the game are kind of declining, then they'll do a cloud port over to Switch, since it's one of those always online games. Why not?
Right.
So have either of you have gotten a chance to play?
Yes. I bought the game last Friday. Or was it Friday? Thursday, maybe. I don't know. Whatever.
Not
it was one of those days. Yeah, unimportant. I bought it and I installed it, and then I started streaming it the other night. I think it was Tuesday. And it was either Monday or Tuesday. I wanted to play
still
the game.
Important.
Still, yeah. The specifics and detail. Nobody needs to know that stuff. But I started playing it, and I wanted to have the viewer have the experience, the same experience that I did, starting it from first or start to finish. I start loading it up, and I'm instantly thrown into this. I have to create a Capcom ID. You know, having to go off site, get a Capcom ID, come back, go to my email, click on the link, go ahead and prove this, put all this information in, yada, yada, yada. Finally, I'm able to play Street Fighter VI. But what does it do? It immediately throws me into an avatar creation. And I'm like, okay, that's like, I don't necessarily want to be forced to do this. I want to go ahead and just play the game in the arcade mode. But I couldn't. It forced me to go into avatar creation, then explore the online lobby realm where all these other fighters are at. It's like the social gathering area where they have got the store. They've got other mini games that you can play with, like Final Fight. And I was like, well, what do I have to do here? Where can I go? I'm running around. I don't see anything about this particular option or this particular option. And I guess I'm a little slow, but I'm like, somebody's like, hey, why don't you just go back to the main menu? I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I could do that. So I press the start button and I'm like, how do I get out of this? Okay, back, this. And it took me all the way back to the beginning of the game, the load screen. And I got to choose the social hub, the world tour where you create your character. And it's kind of that that RPG-esque style of storyline. Or you could go do the arcade mode and fight to your heart's content. And I was able to do that. I got in a couple of matches and then I called it a stream.
Yeah, I was watching at least the second part of the stream. The game very blatantly funnels you into the online battle hub. You did, I admit, have to look kind of hard for where the other game modes were. But I will say that once you actually found the arcade mode and started playing, the game looks fantastic.
It does. It looks amazing. It plays great. I didn't realize that there were three different types of styles. There's classic, which is basically you're doing the input. So you're doing all the inputs of the move. So if the Falcon Punch takes quarter circle down, forward, and then the punch button, that's what you got to do. The second mode, I think, is modern, basically takes away some of the movements. Your special is just two combinations of buttons. That's it. None of these complex inputs. And I got to thinking, why would they do this? You're making it easy. And I started to fight against that. I've cut my teeth on arcades and controllers where I had to figure out how to do these complex movements. And with my fingers slipping and sliding and yada, 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 I was like, man, that's kind of janky on their part for making it so easy for everybody.
Right.
But then I was like, wait a minute. People with disabilities, these new fighting styles give them access to play a game like Street Fighter VI. I don't know if they had that in Street Fighter V, but because they have this option in Street Fighter VI, it might work for somebody who is disabled with their hands, who can't really do those complex movements that a person without a disability would be able to do. So I think it's kind of perfect.
I might also make an argument for people who just aren't part of the fighting game community.
That's, yeah.
Fighting games are a genre that are so intimidating to get into because, like you were just talking, Donnie, it's a genre where you have to just put in your time. You have to practice the combinations. You have to memorize a gazillion different things, combos, how to stop them, how to counter this, how to counter that, not only with one fighter, but with a gajillion different fighters. It's like, I ain't got time for that. I just don't. I could do it, but I don't have time for it. And Capcom knows there are lots of people out there who think that same way. And being in this modern world that we are, where games must sell millions upon millions of copies, it is smart for them to make the game as accessible as possible, not only to people who may have physical barriers to playing it, but to people who just like, I don't want to make it my lifestyle, okay? I just want to pop in, enjoy a little single player Street Fighter, and then pop back out. So having played with it for maybe an hour, what do you think about the game, though, overall?
The verdict is still out, or the jury is still out on this one, because before we started recording tonight, I did go and take a look at the World Tour mode. It will take a little bit more exploration into that, but it looks amazing, and I think I'm going to enjoy this game for years to come.
So in your expert opinion, you would say that 10 out of 10 is valid.
I'm an expert? Yes.
As a journalist.
More so than us.
As a journalist. Again, I can't say that because I haven't explored the game fully. I've only done a few bits and pieces here and there. But visually, yes, the game is a 10. Content, I would say the game is a 10 because it's got three different modes that you can do. You've got the arcade, you've got the social hub where you can battle other people across the world. You can play Mortal Kombat with a friend in Vietnam in Street Fighter VI. Or you could do the world tour mode. Whenever I heard about that, I was just like, really? Why does Street Fighter have to do something like that? But now I'm kind of intrigued to see exactly what the content lies within.
Yeah, it does seem that you're getting an awful lot of content for your single game purchase price, even if you decide not to go with any of the DLC.
Absolutely. And nobody got the Mortal Kombat reference? Nobody?
Sorry.
You two have failed me. Next up from VGC, Redfall devs reportedly hoped it would be canceled or rebooted by Microsoft. A new report claims to shed light on the circumstances that resulted in Redfall's disappointing release last month. Following several delays, the first major Xbox exclusive from Bethesda released with a number of technical issues and underwhelming gameplay, garnering aggregate scores of 56 on the Xbox Series X and S and 54 on the PC on Metacritic. A new Bloomberg report, which is based on the accounts of over a dozen anonymous sources who worked on the title, said the project started development in 2018 after being pitched to staff as a multiplayer arcane game. Some members reportedly found the pitch confusing and felt unsure that the sort of gameplay Arcane was known for would translate well to a co-op setting. Many experienced developers who weren't interested in making a multiplayer game reportedly left the studio, with almost three-quarters of the Austin staff who had worked on 2017's Prey said to have departed Arcane by the time Redfall was finished. Arcane is said to have experienced difficulties filling vacancies, with lower-than-average salaries, its Texas location, and the desire of prospective employees to work on single-player immersive sims viewed as contributing factors. When development of the game started, Bethesda's then-parent company ZeniMax was reportedly pushing its studios to develop live service titles, and according to Bloomberg, Redfall had a significant microtransaction plan in place for 3 years before it was scrapped in 2021. That same year, Microsoft acquired ZeniMax in a $7.5 billion deal, and some Arcane staff reportedly hoped the Xbox maker might cancel Redfall or reboot it as a single-player game. However, Microsoft took something of a hands-off approach to Bethesda's game development studios, as Xbox boss Phil Spencer, acknowledged in a recent interview, "We should have been there for Redfall co-creative director Harvey Smith and the team earlier. I think that's on us," Spencer said.
Isn't it funny how after a while the truth comes out?
It's funny. I mean, yeah, you could be suspicious of quote unquote anonymous sources, but because everybody has to sign non-disclosure agreements to do anything these days, this is the only way that the truth would come out.
Can you imagine working on a game and saying to yourself, man, I really hope this gets canceled?
Right.
And then to come into work and be like, all right, so what's happening with Redfall? Oh, we're rolling with it.
Like, oh, you okay?
It definitely sounds like a square peg round hole kind of a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Where ZeniMax decided we want a live service multiplayer game that we can use to squeeze millions upon millions upon millions of dollars from players. And we don't care that it doesn't really fit our style. Just make it. We'll make it work later. And the fact that three quarters of your staff left during this process, I think, says a lot when your studio was so celebrated before. Mm-hmm. And what made it special, the talent and passion of the developers, was just kind of tossed aside because we want to make a quick buck. And now Look what Arcane has become.
And I wonder if ZeniMax used this as a bargaining chip for more money for their purchase to say, hey, look, we've got this Redfall game. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be live service. So there's going to be great opportunities to make money, yada, yada, yada. And this is what they delivered.
Yeah, I'm not sure what else Microsoft was supposed to do. I mean, I guess for the purchase price that they paid for ZeniMax, in some ways you think that they should have looked really, really hard at everything that they were buying, but maybe that's not realistic. I don't know. You had this team, like we talked about when we talked about Redfall before, you had this team that has proven itself several times over. So if you had other projects that probably needed more of your attention, maybe they just said, okay, Arcane is probably fine. We'll just leave them to it. And that I suppose could be understood, but then again, Microsoft is an enormous company with more money than God. And so,
of course,
they got a lot on their plate, though.
Yeah, they do.
So I wouldn't fault them for not putting as much manpower into this because they've got so many other things going on.
Mm-hmm. So the developers that left Arkane, if Microsoft sees that a huge chunk of their developers leave that particular studio, that that point they should have stepped in and said, what the hell's going on? Right. So it, Xbox boss Phil Spencer
drink
hits the nail on the head right there. Like, well, we should have been there for them. We should have been more hands-on, in depth with what they were doing and how they were doing it, et cetera, et cetera. That's on us. You're damn right it's on you.
And I think one of the main issue stems here from here, right, is that you had a developer that was used to making one type of game, and they were being asked to make a different type of game. Now, that's not unprecedented, right? But the thing is, I think it requires your developers to believe in this project, that it's something that they want to do and that they can be creative with. If they're hoping that it gets rebooted or canceled, I guarantee you that when they were coming in day after day, they're going, oh God, I got to keep working on this thing.
Right. Absolutely. Right.
So you cut corners, you do things that you wouldn't normally do. You're not as creative. You're just checking a box somewhere to say, yes, we finished this level. Yes, we finished this character. So at the end of the day, if you're going to stretch a company to make something different, you need to make sure that it's something they believe in from day one.
Of course.
Isn't it funny how your boots to the ground workforce isn't motivated by the idea of a quick, cheap buck that they're likely not going to see any pennies from at all? Isn't that weird how that works?
That's so weird.
Crazy, right?
Crazy, Carol.
If Inditex ships a million more units, I don't see a dime.
I don't see a dime. What would you say to some sort of stock option?
And believe me, this is a hypothetical.
New Office Space was a documentary.
It absolutely is.
Of course. All right, let's take a look at our top three new releases.
All right, first up is Amnesia The Bunker, out on Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Amnesia The Bunker is a first-person horror game from the makers of Soma and Amnesia. Left all alone in a desolate World War I bunker with only one bullet remaining in the barrel, it's up to you to face the oppressing terrors in the dark. With randomization and unpredictable behavior, no playthrough is the same. Hunted by an ever-present threat reacting to your every move and sound, you must adapt your playstyle to face hell. Every decision will change the outcome of how the game responds. Keep the lights on at all costs. Persevere and make your way out alive. A truly intense horror experience. Next is Harmony, The Fall of Reverie, out on Switch and PC. When Polly returns home after a few years abroad, she finds her hometown has been taken over by a mega corporation named MK, which is using its power to control the population. She soon discovers that she has a gift of clairvoyance that connects her to Reverie, the realm of the aspirations of humanity. In this world, Polly becomes Harmony, a goddess who has the power to restore the delicate balance between the deity's world and ours. Each action you take will affect both worlds and send you down sprawling narrative paths in this vibrant visual novel. And last up is Diablo 4, out on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Diablo 4 is the ultimate action RPG experience with endless evil to slaughter, countless abilities to master, nightmarish dungeons, and legendary loot. Embark on the campaign solo or with friends, meeting memorable characters through beautifully dark settings and a gripping story, or explore an expansive endgame in shared world where players can meet in towns to trade, team up to battle world bosses, or descend into PvP zones to test their skills against other players, no lobbies necessary, with crossplay and cross-progression on all available platforms. This is only the beginning for Diablo 4, with new events, stories, seasons, rewards, and more looming on the horizon. So looking at these three choices, what are you in for, Donnie?
Diablo 4, Diablo 4, Diablo 4, Diablo 4, Diablo 4, Diablo 4, Diablo 4. I've been waiting for this game for a while now. I still, as someone who still plays Diablo 3 and the newer Diablo 2 remake, I'm very excited to see what Diablo 4 has in store. I do like the fact that they have PvP zones that adds a different element to the game. I was discouraged a little bit when I saw something online the other day about a $25 cosmetic.
What?
And I was like, man.
I mean, it is Blizzard.
It is Blizzard. And at first I was like, well, if you're going to do this, why not just have the auction house? Why not bring that back? Why not give the people a little bit of an incentive to put so many hours into this game that where they have these cosmetics they don't want to use, let us have the auction house back. Let's be able to go out and make some sort of money, get us some compensation for this. But I figured that Activision Blizzard is never going to let us do that.
The most expensive Diablo 4 cosmetic on launch is the Wraithlord armor set for the Necromancer, coming in at a pretty hefty 28,000 platinum coins or $25.
Hmm.
And it does nothing. It's truly cosmetic.
Right, because if at any point in any time that these things become, oh, if you pay for this, then you're going to get an advantage in this game, I'm out. I'm done with all of those games. I will never touch them ever again. But if it's purely cosmetic, which I have done with Warzone, I may or may not do this with Diablo 4. I'm not going to say that.
Did you look pretty in Warzone?
You know, I've got a couple skins that I'm proud of. But I might buy something, one or two trinkets or whatever in Diablo 4, but I'm never going to dump a crap ton of my own money in there for something purely cosmetic. I'll stop rambling and say that Diablo 4 is my choice, with Amnesia the Bunker being a strong second, because that game looks amazing.
All right. How about you, Ryan?
The same. Diablo 4, 100%. I didn't get into Diablo 3. I was big into Diablo 2. I love that game. Diablo 1, less so, but 2 was perfect. And I did the same. I went back and played the remake. I've played the regular game a bunch of times as well. And for some reason or another, I just never got into Diablo 3. But I'm hearing really, really good things about Diablo 4. So this might be my re-entry point into the series. And just to see how good it looks comparatively to my experience with Diablo 2, it's such a huge upgrade. That's awesome. And I just love the gameplay of Diablo anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So sign me up, hoping that the cow level is still there. That was always fun. You got to have the fan service, right?
Right. So if you get this game, just know that you've got somebody to play with.
Beautiful. Blue, I'm really looking forward to playing with you.
Damn.
Amnesia sounds really, really interesting, and I agree, it looks great. This idea that you've only got one bullet left, so you're like the Barney Fife of this bunker.
That makes it a lot less scary if you're imagining Barney Fife running around.
What's the deal with these lights not being on, Andy?
Harmony art style does not appeal to me whatsoever, especially when you add the word visual novel to something. It's like, I'm out. Thank you. So, yeah, Diablo 4, for sure. Amnesia will be something I would probably watch Donnie stream on Twitch first before I tried it out myself.
Oh, do the Barney Fife voice the whole time.
No, I don't think I can keep that up.
Should do that for like charity or something.
I was going to say, it'll be one of the rewards you can cash in your points on the channel.
Yeah, I should set that up with it on the channel.
1 hour of Don Nuts for 200,000 points.
Don't you dare short me out of that Don Nuts voice for 1 second.
Nope. I will demand a refund.
Blue, what about you? What are you picking this week?
It's not my week, I'm going to be honest.
No?
No.
Nothing?
So Harmony, The Fall of Reverie, visual novels are not for me, and I am glad that we live in a world where such types of games can exist.
Touché.
Amnesia the Bunker looks interesting. Like Ryan, I would watch Donnie stream it. I'm not going to play it myself, though. Diablo 4, they are saying a lot of the right things to get me to play, but I don't like modern Blizzard. I just don't. I don't want to make a Blizzard account. I don't want to have to be always online if I only intend to play solo. I don't want to do all that stuff. So, you know, I am going to make the bold choice and say, I'll have none of it.
Oh, here's the thing. If you do choose to get it, you'll have two friends ready to play with you.
Decked out in their $25 cosmetic sets.
Yes.
Ready to take on all of hell.
You get Necromancer armor. You get Necromancer armor. All right, guys. So let's kind of put the main topic on hold. Let's fast forward to tomorrow, right? After Summer Games Fest. You guys want to do that?
Sure.
Make it so.
Can you do that?
I think I can. Hang on. Prepare to fast forward.
You're always preparing. Just go.
All right, fine. Fast forward!
Wow, it worked. That's crazy. It's Thursday now.
All right, so.
I think if fast forwarding scrambled your guys' brains too.
From GameSpot, Summer Games Fest 2023, the biggest game announcements. While it seems like the season of game announcements and developer showcases now has no end, the summer biggest showcase, Summer Games Fest, has officially wrapped up. During the showcase, several new titles and in-depth looks at previous announced games were revealed, sufficiently hyping us up for the next year. Here are some of the games we are most excited for, as well as a bit of more information on the upcoming titles and some release dates.
After more than a decade, a new entry in the Prince of Persia series is on the way. The Lost Crown is a side-scrolling action-adventure game that looks like it will appeal to fans of the Metroidvania genre. The gameplay shown highlighted a more modern-looking protagonist, melee-focused combat, a whole lot of platforming, and plenty of supernatural elements and mythical monsters. The game is slated to release on January 18th, 2024.
Summer Game Fest brought us our first in-depth look at Mortal Kombat 1, the next entry in the Mortal Kombat series, and the start of a new Mortal Kombat universe. Following Liu Kang's ascent to godhood in Mortal Kombat 11, the iconic character apparently created a new universe filled with familiar faces, including Raiden, Sub-Zero, Scorpion, Katana, and Jax. The latest mechanic to be added to the series is the cameo function, which allows players to select two characters from the roster, a primary fighter and a cameo fighter, and summon in the cameo to execute special attacks. Naturally, all the series' iconic fatalities remain intact, though several characters throughout the trailer did not. The game is scheduled to release September 19, 2023.
2D Sonic is back with a sleek and stylish 3D art style. Players can choose between Sonic, Knuckles, Tails, and Amy as they race through the classic feeling stages with updated mechanics and fun new ways to play. The game will feature four-player co-op as well as new abilities like Grapple Hook. Sonic Superstars is coming in fall 2023. Now, Summer Games Fest brought us another look at Life's of Pi, an upcoming Soulsborne-style game that follows Pinocchio as he navigates the plague-ridden city of Krat. The footage shown highlights grotesque enemies, the game's umbrella parry system, and a whale submarine. Yes, you read that right. Life's of Pi is scheduled for release on August 1st, 2023.
After more than a decade in development, Alan Wake is back. Alan Wake 2 is billed as Remedy's first survival horror title, and based on the Resident Evil-style gameplay shared during Summer Game Fest, we can totally see why. The footage shown follows new character Saga Anderson as she explores an abandoned general store and stumbles across a supernatural entity in a deer mask that takes several bullets to knock down. According to Remedy Studios creative director Sam Lake, the upcoming game will follow both Alan and Saga, with each character receiving about 50% of the game's playtime. Alan Wake 2 will release on October 17th, 2022.
Miles Morales and Peter Parker are back in Marvel's Spider-Man 2. On top of featuring two versions of the iconic hero, the game also boasts a map twice the size of 2018's Spider-Man, new villains, and a new mechanic in which gameplay will be impacted by Venom's symbiote. Summer Game Fest not only gave us a closer look at Marvel's Spider-Man 2, but a peek at the game's impressive-looking box art and a release date as well. Spider-Man 2 will hit PlayStation 5 on October 20, 2023.
We got our first look at Sandland, a new Bandai Namco game coming to the PlayStation 5, PS4, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. The game features Akira Toriyama's signature art style, which is immediately comparable to the likes of Dragon Ball and Dragon Quest. The rest of the game looks very different from those two properties, though, showing tank and melee combat across the game's wide desert. There's no release date for this game yet.
The next trailer shown was for Witchfire from the creators of The Vanishing of Ethan Carter, Painkiller, and Bulletstorm. We saw a very spooky forest filled with fog and skeletons before transitioning into first-person shooter gameplay. We saw the player use a crossbow, shotgun, melee combat, and more in the gameplay snippet. Witchfire launches in early access on September 20th.
In celebration of Porsche's 75th anniversary, the company is partnering with Xbox for a collection of new Xbox Series X consoles themed after Porsche cars. They aren't for sale, but you can enter a sweepstakes for a chance to win one. And finally, Cloud's journey continues in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, the second entry in the Final Fantasy VII Remake trilogy. Set just after the party leaves Midgar, Rebirth will see the party explore the world map and visit iconic locations from the original game, such as Calm, Junon, and Cosmo Canyon. While Square Enix is not yet ready to announce the game's release date, the studio did give us a slightly narrower window. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is headed to PlayStation 5 in early 2024.
So, was there anything that you guys saw that absolutely blew you out of your seat?
No, I remained firmly in my seat. Thank you.
I did remain firmly in my seat as well. No, I take it back. You know what blew my mind a little bit?
What's that?
It was when Remedy Studio creative director Sam Lake just waltzed onto the stage in a head-to-toe velvet suit.
That got you out of your seat, huh?
That was the highlight of your Thursday, clearly.
That was the highlight of my Thursday, clearly, because, you know, normally they show up in, what else did we see? We saw flannel, we saw hoodies, you know, you've got Jeff Keighley in his usual, like, suit top and jeans and tennis shoes kind of thing, but Sam Lake showed up to impress.
And Nick Cage looked like he was wearing a shark skin suit.
It's just Nick Cage being Nick Cage.
Yeah, it looked amazing.
So what was exciting for me is not actually for me, but the 2D Sonic looked fun. Now, I've never really been into Sonic games, but I can imagine our friend Coffee Ryan literally blew out of his seat for this one.
Right. That is the baseline for which we're judging everything, right, whether or not you remain seated.
Right. And it looks great. I love that they're bringing back a nod to 2D Sonic, bringing back the gameplay and polishing up a little bit so that, you know, it looks like more modern graphics. It'll probably be just as fun as some of the older Sonic titles. And I think it's a good kind of separation from what Sonic has been for the last two decades is to be able to come back to this. So, Donnie, your prediction for like a major Sega release just happened, big guy.
No. That was console only. I would love to be able to spin it around and say, oh, look what Sega did. They just, this cool looking Sonic game. Does that give me validation? That's not happening here.
I was offering this up to you on a silver platter, sir, and you rejected me.
Our other co-host would have put the kibosh on that so quickly, and she did. So,
yeah, I'm good at kiboshing.
There's no way that was going to happen.
I'm just your enabler. That's all.
See, I want Donnie to succeed on his own merits. I want him to be correct in his prediction, and we can't just, you know, let him shortcut that.
Right. You can't just hand me the win.
Right. He gets mad when you do that.
Yeah. So I didn't think I was actually going to be able to watch the entire thing, but I did. You know, they started off with the Prince of Persia game, and I thought it looked great. It went back to its 2D roots. So I want to check out Prince of Persia. But Mortal Kombat 1, I really liked the fighting that I saw in there, plus the cameos with the K. Don't forget it starts with the K. You know, you got to see some of the players like Striker and old school Mortal Kombat 1 Kano and Sonya come in as cameo fighters. Mm-hmm. I even saw Mortal Kombat 2's Kung Lao, even though I think he's an actual playable character in the game itself. And of course, we saw Jax from Mortal Kombat 2. A lot of good-looking characters that I'm kind of interested to see what all they have up their sleeve.
And Jean-Claude Van Damme, going to be Johnny Cage.
Jean-Claude Van Damme, the game Mortal Kombat has now come full circle. They initially planned that game around Jean-Claude Van Damme back in the 90s. He couldn't commit to it. And now here he is, starring as Johnny Cage. And I don't know what to think about it, but it's kind of cool.
It's all very meta at this point.
Of course.
Do they still do friendlies? Is that still like a thing rather than just fatalities?
Like friendships?
Yeah. Because if they do friendships, it should be that dance that he has from that one movie where he's like swinging his hips, you know?
Yes, oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Please bring that.
Yeah, I thought Mortal Kombat 1, it looked good, even though it doesn't, from my perspective, it doesn't really look that different aside from the cameos themselves, that mechanic. It doesn't look that different from the past couple Mortal Kombat. So
right.
We'll see. The Prince of Persia game, The platforming looked like something I would be interested in, even if I don't care for the art style. I don't care for all these games coming out in that kind of Fortnite-y, Overwatch-y type art style. That is not my thing, but...
It at least reminded me, I don't know if I'm crazy for thinking this, but it reminded me a lot of Metroid Dread.
Yeah, it does have that kind of like a faux 3D, 2D type style platforming look to it.
So maybe you'll get to play your first Prince of Persia game.
And all the purists are just kind of cringing and dying a little bit on the inside.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah.
So I got it. Whenever I saw Porsche's 75th anniversary Xbox Series X console, I know a lot of us in the Discord were kind of like rolling our eyes, but I immediately clicked on that link and went and registered for it. So I think it would be something cool to own if there's only... Actually, I don't know how many there are. Did they say there were 75?
Yep.
Okay. 75 of these consoles in the world. That's kind of like owning one of those gold Xboxes or gold PS4s from Taco Bell or something like that. I think that kind of item would stick with me for years and years and years.
I mean, you got to be a huge loser to sign up with that. So I did that right away as well. I agree. I think it would be like a really cool item just to have. I probably wouldn't take it out of the box. But, you know, with the Taco Bell thing, you brought up an interesting point here. When you click on like the on button for the Taco Bell thing, it makes that like Taco Bell dong.
Yeah.
I think they should do like a Porsche like engine revving up. I think that would be
cool. Oh, yes.
Make it something special rather than just a skin that's on top of it, you know? But I would never play it, so I would never know.
There seem to be a lot of random partnerships with cars that seem to come out every summer. Like at E3, they used to bring out like weird concept cars and stuff.
Right.
But whatever. So now we randomly get a Porsche crossover with the Series X consoles. They're making 75. You can't buy one. You can only win one. So yes, I, of course, also signed up. And if I get it... I am selling that thing so fast.
Oh, my God.
You're not a true fan.
No, I'm not. Highest bidder, come and get it.
It'll probably fetch more than your McNugget Tetris.
Probably.
Yeah, that was $17 on eBay. So I probably would hold out for more than $17 for this. $17,000, maybe.
I'd sell it for a cool $1,000 right off the bat. Here you go. Give me the cash.
Oh, you're cheap.
Oh.
It's not the first time he's heard that. You're right.
We did get two separate Final Fantasy VII games. Mm-hmm. The first one, like when I saw Cloud, or not Cloud, but I saw Sephiroth. He's holding a cell phone. And I was like, okay, what's this? It's a mobile game. And I'm like, oh, no, nope. And then at the very end, they had the second part, I guess, of the Final Fantasy VII remake. Where, I mean, it looked amazing. Don't get me wrong. It looks amazing. But still, I am not a huge fan of the fact that they took a game and are now splitting it up in what I think is what, three parts?
Who even knows?
Yeah.
And they want you to pay $60 to $70 for each part?
But they padded it a lot. They added a ton of filler, okay?
You get to chase cats around.
Right. The cats. Oh my God, the cats.
I don't know. I don't really care too much for the fact that they took that game and broke it up into three parts and want you to pay $70 for each one. I will play this game eventually. I will. But I am not going to do it until each game is like $10 or something like that.
And it's a PS5 exclusive, correct?
For said, now.
Yeah, he said coming to PS5, so it didn't say exclusive, but...
Right. The first part of the remake was exclusive for a while.
Right.
So to play the second part, so if you have the first part and you want a PS4, they're like, hey, we've got the second part that's coming out, but it's only on PS5. You're like, son of a...
I mean, we have reached that point in the console life cycle when they're going to start weaning off the last gen.
Yeah.
It just sucks because I want to...
It does.
I think they did the same with Spider-Man, right? Didn't they only say that Spider-Man 2 is coming to PlayStation 5?
Yep.
Yep.
So...
It's not coming to PS4 or anything like that. They're moving forward and saying, if you own a PS4, that's great. Thanks for playing, but no more games.
But so Spider-Man on PS4 was a complete game. Spider-Man 2 is a complete game.
Yes.
This is all one game that's being split up by two consoles. That sucks.
Depends on how you look at it. They're looking at it as mini games.
You're right.
From a certain point of view.
A certain point of view?
Because we know you nerds are going to buy it. So we're going to split it up and you're going to pay us. That was a live look into the Sony boardroom.
Give us your money, nerds.
Just yep. Wringing their hands. Oh, we're going to make so much off of these nerds. But to be honest with you, for me at least, it definitely was enticing. My favorite part of the game is when you leave Midgar for the first time anyway. So the fact that Junon, Calm, and Cosmo Canyon are in there, I know exactly how long realistically the game is going to span, more or less, at that point. Which is getting close to, obviously, one big spoiler. And wondering if that's going to have an appearance in this. If that's going to be a thing where we talked about before. It's a DLC. Do you get to keep her or not? And I guess we'll find out.
Do you level her up or not?
Never. You never level her. Oh, my God. Oh, that was so disappointing the first playthrough. You're like, oh, yeah, I've got her up to, you know, her level 3 limit break. She's doing good. And like, oh.
Right through her chest. Oh, man. Oh.
But did I see that right? It's going to be on 2 discs.
Yep.
So we went from 3 discs for the entire game to potentially 6, 8, or 10 discs, depending on how many times they break this story up.
But wait, there's more. You get an extra bonus 10th disc. What?
This is like the N64 being able to play Final Fantasy VII. Only needed 21 cartridges. It's fine. It'd be fine. But it was cool to see Bugenhagen, right? It was cool to see. Thank you. well done, sir. Well done.
Tis.
You were able to see kind of the flashbacks of Nibelheim and everything that's going on with that. Some of the appearances of Yuffie or Yuffie, depending on who you ask, but she sucks, so who cares? But is the Gold Saucer coming up soon? Because I would buy a PS5 just to play Gold Saucer,
the
remake.
Wow.
Everybody has their price, right?
That's true. Mm-hmm. Before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by the Elitist Podcast. It's a show where 3 friends and occasional guests play games about video games, including trivia, game show games, and more. You can find... Excuse me.
Please keep that in.
You can find the Elitist on your favorite podcast platform. We'll also have their links in the show notes. This week, we have a little message for the Elitist in honor of their 100th episode.
Welcome back to Who Wants to Be a 100-Air? If you're just tuning in, Blue Williams is one question away from being a 100-Air. She's answered 19 questions correctly in a row. Who knew she was an expert of early Hungarian cabinet making? Let's get to our final question, Blue. Are you ready?
Yes, I am, RGB.
Here's our last question. What seriously awesome podcast is celebrating their 100th episode this week? A. Chippendales, the audio experience. B. Donglers Dongling Dongles. C. Generic 3-hour-long retro gaming podcast. And D. The Elitist Podcast.
I think I'll phone a friend.
Okay, Blue. Well, who are you going to pick?
The one and only Donnie G.
Okay, we'll use our friends at Discord to connect us with Donnie.
Listen, stop calling me about my car's extended warranty.
No, Donnie, no, this is RGB from Who Wants to Be a 100-Air. We have Blue on the line, and she's got one question away from the 100, and she needs your help. Blue, you have 20 seconds.
Donnie, here's the questions. What seriously awesome podcast is celebrating their 100th episode this week? Is it A, Chippendales, the audio experience, B, Donglers Dongling Dongles, C, generic 3-hour-long retro gaming cast, or D, the Elitist Podcast?
That's a lot of D's. I know the 100th episode of the Chippendales audio experience, and my God, was that memorable. That was a long time ago. You know what? It does say seriously awesome podcast, so I gotta go with the Elitist on this one. They're the best.
All right, Blue, Donnie thinks it's the Elitist.
Well, he does know his Chippendales audio experience, so if he says the Elitist, then I'll go with the Elitist.
Final answer?
Final answer.
You are absolutely right. You've won absolutely nothing, though. The real winners are our friends at the Leavis Podcast.
Congratulations, guys.
Woohoo! 100 episodes.
Yeah, guys. Congratulations. You know, it's been a great opportunity to partner with you guys on a lot of stuff. So thank you so much. And here's to 100 and hopefully 100 more.
Can you guys institute some oil like the Chippendales do?
All right. Thank you for coming, students. Please take your seats. Welcome back to Professor Rybrand's Gaming History 101. And in today's lesson, we'll talk about an aspect of video games that helps set the scene, create emotions, tell the story, and build long-lasting memories for players. Sounds like a heavy lift, right? Well, today we'll be discussing the early history of video game music. Today, though, I wanted to talk about kind of where it all came from. Rather than specific soundtracks or going into specific games, I wanted to talk about like what's the evolution of what video game music has come from. So if we look at video game music, it has long been seen as an important part of the immersiveness of games. Much like movies and TV shows, music lends to the storytelling and instructs the player how to feel in the moment. Whether it's somber because of the loss of a teammate or anxious as you are put to a challenge or even jovial due to victory, music has had a big role in what makes video games so memorable for its fans. Now, video games and music, though, were not born together. In fact, the addition of music to video games was a slow process. Most of the sounds you hear in early video games were to instruct the player that something happened, whether it was contacting the ball in Pong or the simulated engine noise of Speed Race, the arcade game. This is a legacy mechanic brought over from the early days of electromechanical arcade games of the past, usually accompanying with the ringing of bells, which to me, I find super annoying.
A little bit.
If you go into an old arcade and it's just ding, 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 ding. It's like, get me out of here. Now, it's unclear whether or not video game developers at the time wanted to include soundtracks or not, but the biggest hurdle to this happening had to do with the technology at the time. When it came to music and games in the 1970s, you had two choices. You could use physical media like phonograph records or cassette tapes, or you could attempt to use digital inputs, which created by the computer inside the machine that outputted analog sound. Both choices were not ideal. When it came to physical media, they were prone to mechanical errors and were often unreliable. Plus, you'd end up using computer processing power if you wanted to not have the music just be a constant loop in the background. With using digital to analog sounds, the computers of the time didn't have a whole lot of available computing power to create sounds. Only one or two sound channels meant that you could only play up to two tones at a time. If there was anything happening on screen that the player needed to hear, you'd sacrifice one of the sound channels, basically removing the bass or treble of the music to accomplish the task. If you ever played an older game that paused the music for a split second to output game sound, then you know exactly how annoying that is. I'm looking at you, Rock and Roll Racing from the Sega Genesis.
Cat is dominating the race!
So the first example of digital analog music in a game goes all the way back to 1975's Gunfight by Taito Midway. The game was a simulated high noon style duel where players shot at each other, and if you scored a hit, the phrase "You got me" would appear above the corpse, and the song "Funeral March" by Chopin would play for a brief few seconds. That's right. Started off classical.
Keep it classy.
Exactly. Now, playing short clips of music was really the first evolution of music into games, often for title or victory screams. Think Donkey Kong or Pac-Man, where they had jingles rather than constant music. One of the earliest examples, however, of background music came from Taito's Space Invaders, which would play a few tones on loop. What truly made it groundbreaking was the music would speed up as the player eliminated aliens on screen. Now, I've heard some stories that this was actually a bug because the original speed was a result of sprite slowdown. And once they were removed, it would allow the CPU to be less bogged down. Now, I can't completely confirm this, but it definitely seems plausible. Now, as computing power became less expensive and more widely available in the early 1980s, music started to become a necessary part of video game space. The Commodore 64, for example, had 8 sound channels that it could use simultaneously, while the Famicom boasted 5, which was a huge improvement from Atari's 2 and the ColecoVision's 4. Now, 5 sound channels an orchestra doesn't make, but realistically, this allowed for full songs to be incorporated in video games. Plus, with the expansion of RAM in the systems, that meant you could produce longer than a few tones on a loop. This is where music began to have an explosion in the gaming space, and the role of music composer for games was first conceived. Some of the greatest music minds in the video game found their start in the 1980s and 1990s as the technology continued to improve. Such names as Koichi Sugiyama for Dragon Quest, Nobu Uematsu for Final Fantasy, Koji Kondo for Super Mario Brothers and Zelda, Hirokazu Tanaka for Metroid, Kid Icarus and Earthbound, and David Wise for Donkey Kong Country. Now, music was finally an integral part of the gaming space, coming out mostly out of Japan. And by the mid-1980s, Western developers like Cineware, Sierra, and Interplay began to put a huge focus on ensuring games included epic soundtracks as well. In fact, video game music got its first real nod of legitimacy in 1986 with the introduction of the Best Soundtrack category added to the Golden Stick Awards, with Rob Hubbard's soundtrack for the game Sanzion being the first winner, which I listened to and you can listen to now. I wanted to turn it off immediately because it's ear-piercing, but here you go. Enjoy. As time has progressed and the technology has advanced, especially with the introduction of optical media from the PlayStation moving forward, composers have been free to make full-bodied musical tracks that can simulate any style of genre of music. Starting from the roots of attracting players to put their quarters in the arcade machine to helping them tell compelling and often emotional stories, it's been a wonderful evolution that music has played in the history of video games. So to wrap things up, I don't always remember every detail of each game I play, but one thing I'm likely to remember most is its soundtrack if it's good. These songs stick with you. You hum them days to months later in your head. And when you hear them again years later, it puts you right back in the emotional state that the game has beset on you. So thank you to all of the music composers who have created such an important part of the enjoyment of video games. So thank you for attending today's Gaming History 101. Just a reminder, if you have any ideas for a story you'd like to hear, send us a message at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com, and we might feature your suggestion.
All right, let's go ahead and wrap up this episode. Thank you for listening to episode 76 of Gamers Week Podcast, and a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast, the Elitist Podcast, and Love Retro BTW for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Watch us on Twitch at twitch.tv/gamersweekpodcast. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. Or join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. And finally, since you made it all the way to the end of this episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. While you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice. 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 Is there an echo? Jeez, you got a big game collection. You didn't have to say it twice. I didn't. Because of the echo.
Predator reference for the win. I love the fact that you didn't go fully into that, so yeah, appreciate that.
Yeah, I got to be clean. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Join our Patreon and become a sexual Tyrannosaurus. Good night.
Now nobody will.
Yeah. Or everybody will. We don't know.
follow me.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like...
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your dick fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.